The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include more record highs for S&P 500, Dow on first day of 2022, and Tesla surges after delivery record stuns Wall Street. Wall Street got 2022 off to a solid start Monday, with more record highs for the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The S&P 500 rose 0.6%, and the Dow finished 0.7% higher. Both indices eclipsed the record highs they set last Wednesday. The NASDAQ Composite rose 1.2%. Technology stocks and a mix of retailers and other companies that rely on consumer spending accounted for a big share of the gains. Apple rose 2.5%, closing just shy of becoming the first company to hit a market capitalization of $3 trillion. It briefly traded above that level during the day. Tesla jumped 13.5% for the biggest gain in the S&P 500 after reporting strong delivery numbers for 2021. Bond yields rose significantly. The yield on the 10-year Treasury rose to 1.64% from 1.51% Friday. That helped push up shares in banks, which rely on higher yields to charge more lucrative interest on loans. Bank of America rose 3.8%. The market's solid start to 2022 follows another banner year for stocks on Wall Street. The S&P 500 closed out 2021 with a gain of 26.9%. or a total return of 28.7%, including dividends. That's nearly as much as the benchmark index gained in 2019. The S&P 500's latest milestones, following up on the 70 record highs it posted last year, are a sign investors remain bullish about stocks, despite the recent spike in COVID-19 cases from virus fast-spreading Omicron variant and expectations that the Federal Reserve will begin pushing up interest rates sometime this year to fight rising inflation. It's been going on for months and months. We've had all-time highs, and we keep hitting them. And Randy Frederick, Vice President of Trading and Derivatives at Charles Schwab, said, when you still have a low interest rate environment, which we do, at least for now, stocks are the place to be. The S&P 500 rose 30.38 points to 4,796.56. The Dow gained 246.76 points to 36,585.06. The NASDAQ rose 187.83 points to 15,832.80. Smaller company stocks also rose. The Russell 2000 gained 27.24 points, or 1.2%, to 2,272.56. The major challenges to the economy and corporate profits that investors navigated in 2021 remain potential headwinds in the new year, including the viral pandemic. Wall Street has been busy since December monitoring the latest wave of cases with the Omicron variant. Businesses and consumers are also still dealing with supply chain problems and persistently rising inflation that has made a wide range of goods more expensive. The rising cost could threaten to crimp consumer spending and weaken economic growth. The long list of concerns made for a choppy end to 2021, but didn't stop the broader market from delivering strong annual gains for stock investors. Despite all of this growth in Omicron the virus, the S&P hasn't been derailed, with the exception of the day after Thanksgiving when the news first broke, Frederick said. While the strength in technology companies drove the S&P 500 overall higher Monday, the number of stocks in the index that rose were just about even with decliners. Healthcare companies fell broadly and kept gains elsewhere in the market in check. Pfizer shed 4.1% despite news that the U.S. expanded its use of COVID-19 booster shots for children as young as 12. Industrial stocks also fell. Union Pacific, a railroad operator, slid 1.7%. Investors have several key pieces of economic data to look forward to during the first week of the new year. The Institute for Supply Management will give investors an update on the manufacturing sector on Tuesday and the services sector on Thursday. The big event on the economic calendar this week is the Labor Department's jobs reports coming up on Friday. Next, Tesla surges after delivery record stuns Wall Street. Tesla, Inc. is set for a strong start to the new year after the electric car maker smashed its quarterly record for deliveries in what one analyst called a trophy case performance. The company's shares jumped as much as 7.7% before the open of regular U.S. trading on Monday, putting them on track for the best start to a year since Tesla went public more than a decade ago. The EV market leader's stock soared almost 50% in 2021 to give it a market valuation exceeding $1 trillion, one of only a handful of U.S.-based public companies to achieve that status. Worldwide deliveries totaled 308,600 vehicles in the fourth quarter, well ahead of the average analyst estimate of roughly 263,000 vehicles, and topping the company's previous record of 241,300 from the prior quarter. Annual handovers surged to more than 936,000 in 2021, up 87% from the previous year's level, Austin, Texas-based Tesla said Sunday. This is a trophy case quarter for Tesla, as the company blew away even bull case expectations, Daniel Ives, an analyst at Wedbush Securities, said in an email. He called it a jaw-dropper performance for the end of the year that gives massive tailwinds heading into 2022. The record quarter underscores the green tidal wave taking hold for Tesla and Chief Executive Officer Elon Musk, I've said in a note to clients. The results also point to robust demand in China and Tesla's skill at navigating the global semiconductor shortage, he said. Quarterly deliveries are one of the most closely watched indicators for Tesla. They underpin its financial results and are widely seen as a barometer of consumer demand for electric vehicles as a whole because the company has led the charge for battery-powered cars. Tesla has said repeatedly it expects 50% annual increases in deliveries over a multi-year period. The seventh consecutive quarterly gain comes amid a global semiconductor slump that has crimped production at most other automakers and kept sales in check despite rising demand. Next, Durham seeks to strengthen resources for embattled renters. Olivia Ferguson moved from Raleigh to Durham because it was cheaper. But the 31-year-old mother of three says her wages as a cashier at an internet cafe leave her struggling to pay the rent on her family's East Durham apartment. She applied and was approved for rental assistance, but her landlord won't take the money. Now, the Durham City Council is looking for ways to protect people like Ferguson and other renters who make up nearly half of the county's households. Ferguson moved into her home in March 2019 and said her rent rose from $795 to $850 per month in July. She is currently 2 months behind, owing $1,700. In September, she applied to Legal Aid of North Carolina for emergency pandemic rental assistance from Durham County. Ferguson's application was approved, but her landlord, Rick Soles, is not participating in the program. She is among about 160 people who rent from Soles who applied for aid, according to county records. Soles filed an eviction notice on Ferguson in late November. "I can't even think about Christmas right now," Ferguson said in an interview before the holiday. "I have to worry about making sure I can keep the roof over their head. And I just don't know how far it's going to go before he comes and locks up my house," she added. The Durham Emergency Rental Assistance Program is a city-county program funded by $9.6 million from the U.S. Department of Treasury. The Durham County Department of Social Services runs it. Program manager Lee Little said payments are made electronically or by check after the parties sign a landlord and tenant agreement stating the amount that is owed for rent, utilities, and late fees. According to Little, DSS has processed 2,858 of 7,665 applications and expects to pay out on about 5,000 applications by February. The program stopped taking applications in October to focus on reducing a backlog after the federal eviction moratorium ended in August. The county anticipates having enough money to cover qualifying households that applied by that deadline. Money can now go to tenants if landlords won't take it directly, but the county says the best way to make sure the aid is being used properly is for landlords to participate. Solis said he signed an LTA in September to test drive this thing, but still has not received any money. "I have no working arrangements with any of these folks that were behind on rent," Solis said. "If Legal Aid and DSS had not gotten involved, we could have been working with these people and they wouldn't be in the situation that they're in." The agreement states landlords cannot file for evictions for 60 days after signing the agreements. But Sarah D'Amato, the supervising attorney at Legal Aid North Carolina, explained that landlords like Solis will dismiss some cases and then refile others. Solis maintained the program was not confirming when a tenant had been approved and for how much, making him reluctant to put evictions on hold. But D'Amato said the county is caught in a holding spot until the next round of ERAP funding, which is expected in mid-January. Tenants are put in a precarious position because everything depends on where their case is, she said. Paying the rent is just one challenge Durham renters face. Decades-long residents of the Braswell Properties apartment on North Buchanan Boulevard, many of them disabled, elderly, and or families with young children are being forced to leave their homes by December 31st. I'm angry. I am very angry, City Council Member Charlie Reese said during a council meeting. Tenants at the Braswell property, some of who have resided in the neighborhood for almost 50 years, were made aware that their property had been sold out from under them by their landlord and told to vacate by the end of the year. Obviously, that was a very short notice at a time of year when folks should be celebrating the holiday season, not suffering from the stress and strain of trying to find a new place to live, Reese said. The sudden termination of leases and other problems renters are having have council members seeking ways to strengthen protections for renters. Last month, the group Bull City Tenants United presented a draft tenant bills of rights, which the city reviewed. The way in which our laws and regulations are put into place must benefit a subsection of folks in our community, council member Dedrenia Freeman said. This issue is not just limited to Braswell properties. We can use ERAP to address the rentals, but we don't have a way to address the repairs just yet, and we need to make sure we are covering all sides that make our housing affordable, Freeman said. The council voted to expand the city's contract with legal aid from roughly $1.5 million to $2.6 million to provide legal guidance for an estimated 620 Durham residents at risk of eviction annually. I always appreciate when the community gathers around an issue like what's happening at Braswell Properties, but that's just another day for us here at Legal Aid, Yamato said. This happens every day in Durham. Next, airlines warn of flight delays over new 5G concerns. Airlines warned of increased flight delays after AT&T Inc. and Verizon Communications Inc. brushed aside a U.S. government request to postpone new 5G service that aviation interests say risks safety because it may interfere with aircraft electronics. The two wireless companies on Sunday said the request from Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg and Steve Dixon, administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration, would be to the detriment of millions of mobile customers. The company said they might offer a six-month pause near some airports. Airlines and regulators predicted substantial impact on flight schedules if there aren't some adjustments to the 5G service set to start Wednesday. The Airlines for America trade group, using worst-case assumptions, said there could be as many as 350,000 commercial flights affected per year at a cost of $2.1 billion. The new 5G signals would use a set of airwaves made freshly available to mobile communications providers. The frequencies are near those used by altitude-sensing radar altimeters. Airlines and aircraft manufacturers have said that creates a chance of interference that could leave some landings unsafe. The wireless industry said power levels are low enough to preclude interference, and the gap between frequencies is sufficiently large to ensure safety. The carriers on Sunday cast the 5G rollout as a priority, citing a race with China to offer extensive high-speed mobile broadband and escalating demand for wireless service amid the COVID pandemic. The wireless industry paid more than $80 billion in an auction for access to the frequencies in question, and AT&T and Verizon will rely on them for network upgrades to compete with T-Mobile US Inc. in providing the next generation of fast mobile broadband. Next, sticker shock. Buyers aghast at average of $29,000 for used cars. A couple of months ago, a woman paid a visit to Jeff Schreier's used car lot in Omaha, Nebraska. She was on a tight budget, she said, and was desperate for a vehicle to commute to work. She was shown three cars priced at her limit, roughly $7,500. Schreier said the woman was stunned. "That's what I get for $7,500," he recalled her saying. The vehicles had far more age or mileage on them than she had expected for something to replace a car that had been totaled in a crash. The woman eventually settled on a 2013 Toyota Scion with 160,000 miles on it. Schreier isn't sure he made any profit on the deal. "We just helped her out," he said. As prices for used vehicles blow past any seemingly rational level, it is the kind of scenario playing out at many auto dealerships across the country. Prices have soared so high, so fast, that buyers are being increasingly priced out of the market. The average price of a used vehicle in the United States in November, according to Edmunds.com, was $29,011. That's 39% more than just 12 months earlier. And for the first time anyone can recall, more than half of America's households have less income than is considered necessary to buy the average priced used vehicle. The days when just about anyone could wander onto an auto lot and snag a reliable late model car for a few thousand dollars have essentially vanished. "I've never seen anything remotely close to this is craziness," said Schreier, who has been selling autos for 35 years. "It's quite frustrating for so many people right now." When the government reported that consumer inflation rocketed 6.8% in the 12 months that ended in November, the sharpest jump in nearly 40 years, the biggest factor apart from energy was used vehicles. And while the rate of increase is slowing, most experts say the inflated vehicle prices aren't likely to ease for the foreseeable future. The blame can be traced directly to the pandemic's eruption in March of last year. Auto plants suspended production to try to slow the virus's spread. As sales of new vehicles sank, fewer people traded in used cars and trucks. At the same time, demand for laptops and monitors from people stuck at home led semiconductor makers to shift productions from autos, which depend on such chips, to consumer electronics. When a swifter-than-expected economic rebound boosted demand for vehicles, auto plants tried to restore full production, but chip makers couldn't respond fast enough, and rental car companies and other fleet buyers, unable to acquire new vehicles, stopped offloading older ones, thereby compounding the shortage of used vehicles. Bleak as the market is for used car buyers, the computer chip shortage has also driven new vehicle prices higher. The average new vehicle, Edmunds.com says, is edging towards $46,000. Even so, prices of used cars are likely to edge closer to new ones. Since the pandemic started, used vehicle prices have jumped 42%, more than double the increase for new ones. Last month, the average used vehicle price was 63% of the average new vehicle cost. Before the pandemic, it was 54%. At this point, Schreier has to tell lower-income buyers that he has very few used vehicles to sell them. "What used to be a $5,000 car," he said, "is now $8,000. What used to be $8,000 is now $11,000 or $12,000. Including taxes, fees, a 10% down payment, and an interest rate of around 7.5%, the average used vehicle now costs $520 a month, even when financed for the average of nearly 6 years, Edmunds calculated. to make that payment and afford such other necessities as housing, food, and utilities. A household would have to take home about $60,000 a year, or $75,000 before taxes, said Kimberly Palmer, a personal finance specialist at NerdWallet. In 2020, the U.S. median pre-tax household income was $67,521, the Census Bureau said. The average person, Palmer said, can't afford the average used car right now. Ivan Drury, a senior manager at Edmund, said that while he doesn't track used vehicle prices relative to household income, he thinks November marked a record in the worst way possible for affordability. Monthly payments for the average used vehicle, noted Ivan Drury, a senior manager at Edmunds, were $413 2 years ago, $382 5 years ago, and $365 a decade ago. The November average payment of $500-plus for a used vehicle is about the average that was needed 5 years ago for a brand-new vehicle. People are going to have to make hard decisions, maybe cut back in other areas, Palmer said. It means that it's stressful for a lot of families. Used vehicle prices are so high that Carl Hogan of Canonsburg, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh, was able last month to quickly sell his 2007 Toyota Tacoma small pickup truck with more than 170,000 miles on it. And even with the vehicle's age and mileage, a man from Ohio forked over $6,500 for it. Hogan didn't have to budge from the asking price. When some would-be buyers offered him less money, he told them, "I've got 12 other guys behind you." A week before the sale, when he bought his new Tacoma, Hogan had been on the other side of the equation. The dealer wouldn't budge from his $38,000 sticker price. "If I didn't take it," Hogan said, "there were three people waiting, and I couldn't get any off, but I wanted a new truck." Dave Paris, a senior manager at J.D. Power, noted that used vehicle prices are directly tied to the cost of new ones. Although some automakers report that the computer chip supply is gradually improving, prices paid by dealers at used vehicle auctions kept rising through November, Paris said. "We're not seeing any softening in prices, which is extremely rare for this time of year," he said. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.